Mark chapter 14. After 2 days, it was the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And the chief priests and the scribes sought how they might take him, Jesus, by trickery and put him to death. They wanted to utterly destroy Jesus. But they said, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar from the people. And the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread were very important pieces. They were very important feasts for the Jews. And being in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table, a woman came with an alabaster box of very precious ointment of spikenard. And she broke the box and poured it on his head. And there were some who had indignation within themselves and said, why was this waste of the ointment made? For it might have been sold for more than 300 pence and have been given to the poor. And they murmured against her. It's my understanding that 300 pence is more than a year's wages. In another account, we also know that it was mostly Judas Iscariot who was mad about it, because he would have liked to have taken it and sold it, because he was a thief and a liar. He had been stealing money from the apostles and Jesus's, you know, purse for who knows how long. Also, this may be, I'm not positive, but this may be the same, this woman may be the same one talked about in John 11:2, which was Mary, the sister of Lazarus. Not positive on that, right? That might have been her. And Jesus said, leave her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has worked a good work for me. Oh, that W word again, work. Works of obedience. For you always have the poor with you, and you may do them good whenever you want, but you do not always have me. There's always going to be poor people in the world to help, but you're not always going to have me. She has done what she could. She has come beforehand to anoint my body for burial. So this woman apparently knew that Jesus was going to die. Hadn't thought about that before, but she must have known. Truly I say to you, wherever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, what she has done shall also be spoken of as a memorial of her. And here we are, 2,000 years later, and we're still talking about this woman who anointed Jesus. And Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priest to betray him to them, and they were glad when they heard it and promised to give him money. We know from other accounts that he was given 30 pieces of silver, which, if you look in the law of Moses, that was the price for a slave. And he sought how he might conveniently betray him. And the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, the Passover lamb, his disciples said to him, where do you want us to go and prepare that you may eat the Passover? And he sent out two of his disciples and said to them, go into the city, and you shall meet a man bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him, and wherever he goes in, say to the master of the house, the master says, where is the guest room where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? And he will show you a large upper room furnished and prepared. Prepare for us there. And his disciples went out and came into the city and found everything just as he had said to them, and they prepared the Passover. Now remember, the Passover is a feast that God instituted back in the Old Testament under the law of Moses. And this was based on the 10th plague in Egypt, where Moses commanded his people to kill a lamb, put its blood on the doorposts, to mark their houses as ones where the angel would pass over their house and not kill the firstborn. And all the Egyptians, their firstborns were killed by the angels. And if there were any Israelites who did not obey God's instructions on this, I suppose their firstborn was killed too. And if there were any Egyptians who did obey, I don't know if there were, But if there were, then I suppose the angels would have passed over them. So this is what the Passover is about. It's about the death of the firstborn. And it plays an important role here. We know from Romans 15:4, Paul said that the things that were written aforetime were written for our learning. And he's referring to the Old Testament. We don't live under the Old Testament today, but we can certainly learn a lot. Because if we don't understand the Old Testament, we're not going to understand a lot of the New Testament when it talks about the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the killing the Passover. And we wouldn't know what any of that meant if we didn't understand the Old Testament. And in the evening, he came with the 12, and as they sat and ate, Jesus said, "Truly I say to you, one of you who eats with me shall betray me." And they began to be sorrowful and say to him one by one, "Is it I?" And another said, "Is it I?" And he answered and said to them, "It is one of the 12 who dips with me in the dish. The Son of Man indeed is going as it is written about him. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had never been born." And we all know who he's talking about. This had to happen. It was God's plan all along. But it would have been better if Judas Iscariot had never been born. What I find sad, though, is Judas betrays Jesus and then is sorry about it afterwards. And what he could have done is he could have repented of his sins and obeyed and gone to heaven. But instead he goes out and kills himself. And I find that so sad, because he could have gone to heaven. And as they ate, Jesus took bread and blessed and broke it and gave it to them and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." So this is Jesus instituting the Lord's Supper. And he took the cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. And he said to them, "This is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many. Truly I say to you, I will no longer drink of the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new in the kingdom of God." And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. So Jesus has instituted the Lord's Supper. He took unleavened bread. They partook of it. That was to represent his body that he was sacrificing for us. Then he gave them fruit of the vine, which is just going to be simply grape juice. And that represented his blood that he was shedding for the world, for everybody who believes and obeys. And Jesus said to them, "Ye shall all be made to stumble because of me this night. For it is written," and this is from Zechariah 13:7, "I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. But after I'm raised, I will go before you into Galilee." So he's telling his apostles right there, every single one of you is going to betray me tonight. You're going to deny knowing me. You're going to run away. But Peter, of course Peter, said to him, "Although all should be made to stumble, yet I will not." Ha! We'll see. And Jesus said to him, "Truly I say to you, that this day, even in this night, before the rooster crows twice, you shall deny me three times." But he spoke more vehemently, "If I have to die with you, I will not deny you in any way." They all said likewise. And we know what's coming up. And they came to a place that was named Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." And he took Peter and James and John with him and began to be greatly distressed and to be very heavy. Remember, Jesus is deity, but he's also a man. And nobody enjoys the process of being murdered. And said to them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful to death. Remain here and watch." I can't imagine. You know that that night and then the next day you're going to be beaten and tortured and humiliated and falsely accused, falsely convicted, and then crucified on a cross. You know this is coming. How upset would you be? I would be a basket case. And again, Jesus was deity, but he was also a man. And he went forward a little and fell on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. He's actually asking his Father, if there is another way that this can be done, can we do it that way? I don't want to go through this. But And he said, Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Don't make me do this. Nevertheless, not what I will, but you will. And that is the attitude that we should always have as Christians. Even if it's something we don't want to do, not my will, but thine be done. And he came and found them sleeping. That's Peter, James, and John. They were sleeping. I don't know how long Jesus' prayer was, but they had fallen asleep. And said to Peter, Simon, are you asleep? Could you not watch 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit truly is willing, but the body is weak. So even then, Jesus is teaching them and warning them, be careful. Be careful about temptation. And again he went away and prayed and spoke the same words. This is the second time he prayed. And when he returned, he again found them asleep, for their eyes were heavy. They did not know what to answer him. So he went off again, begged his father, if there's any other way we can do this, let's do it, because I don't want to have to go through this. Yet not my will, but thine be done. And he came the third time and said to them, sleep on now and take your rest. It is enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise up, let us go. Behold, he who betrays me is at hand. So he knew Judas Iscariot was coming with all of these people. And he had prayed to God three times. And it's kind of a lesson for us too. You know, in Matthew, we read that Jesus said, don't pray with vain repetitions. But we also, I can't remember if it was in Matthew, he taught a parable about a woman who just pestered this judge over and over and over again for the same thing. And he finally gave in because he was sick and tired of hearing her. So there's a lesson there in that we shouldn't just repeat vain words that we don't mean all the time in our prayers. But on the other hand, persistence, God wants. He wants us to be persistent in our prayers, especially if it's a prayer that's according to his will. Okay, so, and immediately while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, and with him a great multitude with swords and clubs, came from the chief priests and the scribes and the elders. You notice they came from them. The chief priests, the scribes, and the elders didn't go out there themselves. Of course not. They're not going to do the dirty work. So they send out a bunch of people to go after Jesus. And he who betrayed him, Judas, had given them a sign, saying, whomever I shall kiss, that same as he, take him and lead him away safely. So he had a code. He was like, okay, the man that I go up to kiss, that's Jesus. Because a lot of these people in this multitude probably didn't know what Jesus looked like. And as soon as he had come, immediately he went to him and said, Master, Master, and kissed him. And they laid their hands on him and took him. And one of those who stood by drew a sword and struck a servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. Now, we know from a different account that it was, yes, it was Peter, of course. And he cut off the servant of the high priest. And in another account, it gives us his name. I forgot what it was. It's like Malchus or something like that. And Jesus answered and said to them, have you come out as against a thief with swords and clubs to take me? Tell me, when was ever a Jesus a violent criminal? You know, a danger to society. And yet they just came out with all these weapons and grabbed him. And I mean, how ridiculous, right? He said, daily I was with you in the temple teaching and you did not take me. But the scriptures must be fulfilled. Going back to Peter cutting off the ear of the servant of the high priest, we'll read another account that Jesus actually picked up this man's ear and miraculously reattached it. Again, proof that miracles do not happen today. Do you see people cutting off someone's appendage and then just picking it up and miraculously reattaching it? I'm not talking about surgery. I'm just talking about puts it on and supernaturally it just reattaches good as new. Doesn't happen. Okay, so, and they all forsook him and fled, talking about the apostles. Exactly what he said they would all do. And they all forsook him and fled. And a certain young man, maybe Mark, Mark's writing this book. Maybe we're talking about Mark here. I don't know. I've never quite understood this sentence. And a certain young man followed him, having a linen cloth thrown around his naked body. And the young man took hold of him, and he left the linen cloth and fled from them naked. I have no idea what that's about. If anyone has any ideas, let me know. And they led Jesus away to the high priest, and all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes were assembled with him. And Peter followed him from afar, even to the palace of the high priest. So again, Peter denied Jesus too. He ran away, but he did follow Jesus. I don't know if any of the other apostles did. And Peter followed, and he sat with the servants and warmed himself at the fire. And the chief priests and all the council sought for witness against Jesus to put him to death and found none. For many bore false witness. Basically, they were trying to find people to lie because they needed a good excuse to kill him. Can't just say, here's an innocent man, let's kill him. Yay. So they were trying to find false witnesses, but their testimonies did not agree with each other. And certain ones arose and bore false witness against him, saying, we heard him say, I will destroy this temple that is made with hands within 3 days. I will build another made without hands. Now, they took this completely out of context. Jesus said this in John 2:21, but he was talking about himself. But even then, their testimonies did not agree with each other. So these liars couldn't even get their story straight. And the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, do you answer nothing? What is it that these testify against you? But he remained silent and answered nothing. Can you imagine? I could not do that. If I was arrested for something I did not do and I was accused of a whole bunch of things, I would just be screaming my head off. But Jesus was allowing this to happen because it was God's plan. Again, the high priest asked him and said to him, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? And Jesus said, I am. And you shall see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, why do we need any further witnesses? You heard the blasphemy. What do you think? And they all condemned him to be guilty of death. So their accusation was blasphemy. You are claiming to be deity. Guess what? He is deity. But they didn't believe. And some began to spit on him and to cover his face and to beat him and to say, prophesy. And the servants struck him with the palms of their hands. Can you imagine these people that did that to him if they realized that they were really doing all of this to the Son of God? How ashamed they would be. But they didn't believe. They just thought that he was some faker. Even though many of them had seen supernatural acts done by him, they still didn't believe. And as Peter was below in the palace, one of the maids of the high priest came, and when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, and you also were with Jesus of Nazareth. But he denied it, saying, I do not know or understand what you are saying. And he went out to the porch, and the rooster crowed. Okay, so there's the first denial. And a maid saw him again and began to say to those who stood by, this is one of them. And he denied it again, second time. And after a little while, those who stood by said again to Peter, surely you are one of them, for you are a Galilean, and your speech agrees to it. But he began to curse and to swear, saying, I do not know this man of whom ye speak. Third time he denied Jesus. After telling him just a few hours before, I will die before I deny you. I will never deny you. A few hours later, I don't know the guy. I have no idea what you guys are talking about. And the rooster crowed the second time, and Peter called to mind the word that Jesus said to him, before the rooster crows twice, you shall deny me three times. And when he thought on it, he wept. In another account, it says that I guess he was fairly close to Jesus, because it says Jesus turned and looked at him. I always find that a chilling passage. I can't imagine Jesus turning and looking at me with sadness and disappointment, I'm sure, because, you know, Peter had just denied him. You know, Peter was so upset. But unlike Judas, he repented of his sin and continued on with his life, being obedient to Jesus. And as far as I know, Peter was saved. Judas, on the other hand, instead of repenting and continuing on with his life, believing and obeying,
he went and killed himself. So Peter had what we call godly sorrow, where Judas had worldly sorrow. Big difference between the two. Worldly sorrow is not going to get you anywhere. You need godly sorrow, which godly sorrow then leads to repentance and asking for forgiveness of sins and going on and trying harder the next time. And that is Mark chapter 14.